On the line now, I have Richard Nairn, writer and ecologist. Good afternoon to you, Richard.
Hello, how are you?
Terrific book that you have out, Dublin Bay, Nature and History. It's really terrific. I had a skip through it. I didn't get through it all, but I had a good skip through it. But the development of the bay over the many, many years, many, many changes as well.
That's right. The bay has changed radically since the days of the Vikings when they arrived in Dublin in the 9th century. At that stage, it was a wide open estuary. The Liffey was twice or three times as wide as it is today, and shallow and muddy. And the river, instead of coming out in a straight line, meandered across the sand and eventually found its way out to the sea. So this was quite dangerous for shipping, and there were large numbers of wrecks as they entered in later years when the sailing ships came in.
And coming up to more modern, over the past maybe, 50 years, has it been good for the development? Has it been good for the bay? I mean, you have a complete history here.
Well, it depends on your viewpoint. I mean, the port has involved a huge amount of reclamation from the bay over the last 200 years as it stretched out from the city and took up quite a large area of sand and mud that was already there and being used by birds and shellfish and all the rest. Mm-hmm. However, one of the side effects of the building of the Great South Wall, which stretches out from Ringsend towards the Poolbeg Lighthouse, was that it contained the channel into a straight line, and the tide was forced out between the two lighthouses, thereby scouring out the sand that had settled in the mouth of the river over the centuries. Mm-hmm. And that sand moved north and formed the present Bull Island. So we know when it began to form from the old maps, around 200 years ago. And it's been developing ever since. So mm-hmm. Before that, there was no North Bull Island.
I remember hearing once about some connection with Captain Bligh with the bay. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. The famous Captain William Bligh, who was known for his the mutiny on the ship called the Bounty in the South Pacific, was a Royal Naval captain, and he returned to Britain, and about 12 years later he was dispatched to Dublin to try and sort out the problem of ships being wrecked on the sand. And he was the one who carried out the first accurate chart with depths and so on of the bay and of the river, and he suggested a north wall, which would be parallel to the present Great South Wall. But the city fathers, or you could say the corporation of the time, disagreed with him. And 20 years later, they employed another engineer who designed the present Bull Wall that runs at an angle from Clontarf out to the mouth of the river. And that was built in and around 1820, thereabouts.
Okay, now the name of the book again is Dublin Bay, Nature and History, and you had a collaboration there with David Jettrey and Robert. How did the book come about? What inspired you to write it?
Well, I grew up in Dublin Bay. I learned to swim and to sail and to fish there, and I lived on its shores for most of my early life. My father grew up in Sandymount, and he had the bay as his back garden. My grandfather lived in Sandymount as well, and my great-grandfather lived in Clontarf, and he was a very well-known painter, artist, and painted some wonderful accurate pictures, sketches and paintings of Dublin Bay and all the shipping at that time. This is back in the end of the 19th century. So having found some of those paintings and sketches, I was inspired to look at the history, and as I'm a naturalist, I was fascinated by the nature, the birds, the sand dunes, the flora and so on. And I guess over many years, I've built up this love of the bay and an interest in its development. So that's what led to the book.
And its availability, where can people get their hands on it?
Because, I mean, as they say, it's in all good bookshops, city centre in Dublin, outlying bookshops in some of the shopping centres, and in other parts of the country. And it costs it's 24.95.
Okay, and just to mention as well that you're going to have a talk and a slideshow about the book in on the 9th of March in the Clontarf Yacht and Boat Club. What time will that be at, Richard?
That's at 8 o'clock Friday week, the 9th of March.
What I liked about it as well is some great anecdotes about the names Auchlia, and also about how cockles and mussels caused typhoid fever throughout the city. That's two of the little anecdotes. Tell us about those.
Well, we all know that the name of Dublin is Baile Auchlia, which means literally the town of the ford of the hurdles. And that refers back to the days before there were any bridges over the River Liffey. And at a shallow point, approximately where Capel Street Bridge is today, there was a shallow area, and they put down wooden hurdles, as they were known, like a trackway, I guess, across the shallows, allowing horses and people to wade across the river. And so that gave the city its name. But its English name, Dublin, of course, which is quite different, comes from the Irish dovling, meaning black pool. And that was the pool alongside Christchurch Cathedral, in which the Vikings tied up their ships, their wooden long ships. So that's the origin. Both of the names of Dublin are connected with the bay and the river. Cockles and mussels are both very common in Dublin Bay. Mussels grow mostly on rocks and gravel, and the cockles are buried in the sand throughout the bay, mostly on places like Dollymount Strand and Sandymount Strand. Of course, they're best known through the song Cockles and Mussels. I'm not going to sing it for you, but
I'll see if I can find it and play it later. Go ahead.
The star of the song, Molly Malone, was actually a fictional character, but she represented a kind of way of life, which was out on the mud flats every day, the sand flats, digging the cockles or collecting other shellfish off the rocks around the bay. These were sold on the streets on carts. We've all seen the statue of Molly Malone. People bought them and even ate them in the streets. And the words alive, alive, oh, actually indicate that they weren't cooked. They were just eaten raw in many cases. At that time, this is going back over the centuries, typhoid was absolutely rife in the city. There was a special hospital called Cork Street Fever Hospital, which in which many of the patients died, were treated, and some died. And at one stage, there were up to 12,000 typhoid patients in 1 year in that hospital back in the mid-19th century. So this was a big problem, and various medical doctors and fishery scientists and so on were dispatched to study what was the problem. And of course, they tracked it down to the cockles, which had suffered from pollution due to the sewage that was released raw into the river and into the bay. And it's now that these cockles concentrate any toxins like bacteria in their flesh. And of course, when the people were eating them raw on the streets, they were immediately getting the toxin that causes typhoid.
And the other one, oysters are no longer found in Dublin Bay, which surprised me a bit. And the Dublin Bay prawns, is that legitimate? Dublin Bay prawns?
You won't find Dublin Bay prawns in the bay today. They may have occurred in the past. We don't know that exactly. But the reason they have the name is because large numbers were landed in Dublin, including in Howth, Dunleary, Ringsend, and all those fishing ports. And this was because they were sold in the city, and they became known as the Dublin Bay prawns. They were exported as well, of course, and became known as the Dublin Bay prawns. But the main place where you find them today is in the North Irish Sea off County Louth.
Okay. And the name Bull Island, where does the Bull Island come from?
Yeah, there's various theories on this. The sand flats, which stretch out for up to about 2 kilometres from the shore at Sandymount and off Dollymount, are known respectively as the South Bull and the North Bull. and it just means a big flat area of sand. But some people have said that it is because the waves crashing on the shore was like the roaring of a bull. Now, there's no evidence for that, but it's a nice, attractive explanation. And, of course, when the Bull Island began to form on the North Bull sand flats, it just became known as the North Bull Island.
And as you know, like yourself, as you said, you avail of all the amenities and walking up and down all around the area. It's a wonderful coastline. The people themselves, I mean, I asked you earlier on about the state of it and the development of it and how that would help or not help the area and that sort of carry on. But people themselves going around the area, just should be careful. I think just sort of put out a warning, because I walked down there a bit myself and people are, God, throwing away rubbish and they use it as a dumping ground sometimes. So we would put a plea out to people to desist.
Take your rubbish home, because it doesn't belong in the bay. There's far too much plastic floating around in the sea. A lot of it comes back ashore in other places. So it doesn't just disappear, and rubbish should be taken home from these wild areas.
Mm-hmm. And Richard,
the other problem needs to be considered by visitors is loose dogs on the beach, because they can, if they're uncontrolled, they can cause quite significant disturbance to birds. To seals, which are regularly seen now on the north end of the Bull Island, and also to hares, the wild hare, which used to be found on the Bull Island but has completely disappeared, largely due to disturbance from dogs. So we would ask people to keep their dogs on a lead, or at least control them so they don't go chasing after flocks of birds and the like.
Okay, but there is an initiative there with the Dublin Bay Biosphere. It's a collaboration with organisations. Can you tell me about that?
It's a relatively new thing. It was only established in 2015. And really what it is an attempt to bring together people and nature and to ensure that the two things can coexist. It's recognised by UNESCO, the United Nations Educational Scientific and Cultural Organization. So it has an international status, and it extends to the whole of Dublin Bay now. It's supported by all three local authorities, Fingal, Dublin City, and Dunleary Rathdown County Councils, and by the Dublin Port Company, and also by Bord Fáilte, Fáilte Ireland, name. Together, these organisations are trying hard to coordinate their activities to make sure that they're not, if you like, working at loggerheads. And they have all put some resources into this as well, and they're supporting the post of a coordinator of the Dublin Bay Biosphere. The biosphere is beginning to involve people in the management of the bay and in its protection.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The local communities are quite important for this. Even the management are doing a great job, but they still need the involvement of the local communities as well.
Very much so, yeah. And I mean, I would extend that to residence groups, to local businesses, to all the various agencies that use the bay. That would include the ESB, the Irish Water, even Irish Rail, because of the railway embankment that runs along the edge of the bay. So all these organisations need to be working together and coordinating. And the biosphere is the obvious vehicle, if you like, or organisation to make sure that this happens.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a few things there about that would help with keeping the bay clear and all that, dogs and cars and all that. Is there anything in particular you'd like to see at any end of it that would help in any way to keep the bay intact and keep it up to a standard? In general, maybe the people
quality,
could help.
Water quality is, of course, very important, and that has improved radically now in the last two decades, you could say, since treatment of sewage has been improved steadily. The main thing being that sewage is no longer, sewage effluent, sorry, is no longer released after treatment at multiple locations. It used to be discharged off Dunleary Harbour and off Howth and off Sutton, as well as, of course, in the Liffey. Mm-hmm. But now all of those discharges are centralised at Ringsend. They're all treated to a very high standard. And the result is that the Liffey estuary, or the wider bay, has become essentially clean seawater. And although people haven't really realised that, it is quite high quality. And Ringsend Treatment Works is due to be upgraded again, so that it will be able to cope with the larger capacity as the city grows, but also removing some of the unpleasant nitrogen and phosphorus and so on that tends to be present in sewage. And so that will be removed and taken away by this process, essentially releasing clean water to the bay.
You sound very optimistic about the maintenance and the future of the bay, Richard.
I am, but overriding all of this is the threat of climate change, and we hear a lot about that in the news. Mm. And of course, it affects us all and affects every part of the globe. But the kind of effects that we're going to see in future decades, and indeed it's already happening, is, for example, heating up of the seawater. And we know that it's already warmer by about 1 degree, even though we wouldn't think if you went for a swim off the south wall. But as the decades go past, it will get warmer and warmer. And this is having an effect of expanding seawater. I'm talking about across the globe. Mm-hmm. And one of the results of that is rising sea level. Add to that the melting of the glaciers in places like the Arctic. And all of this is contributing to rising sea level. And it's predicted that we could have up to 1 meter sea level rise by the end of the present century, which is over 3 feet, if you think about that.
Indeed, yeah.
And there are times already when the promenade, for example, at Clontarf will flood with high tides. If you add another metre to that, and indeed a surge of a southeasterly storm, you could see quite serious flooding along there affecting residential areas. And this is something that needs to be addressed urgently, you know, with marine defences and so on. So I think this is, you know, something that hasn't yet really been taken seriously by the people of Dublin.
Okay. Well, let's hope they listen. But I would advise people anyway to read the book. It's absolutely terrific. I'm going to finish it off myself and just go through it more carefully. It's Dublin Bay, Nature and History. And that talk and slideshow about the book. And you're giving the talk yourself, Richard. It's on the 9th of March at Clontarf Yacht and Boat Club.
That's correct. And it's at 8 o'clock in the evening on Friday week.
Okay, thank you very much for talking to us, and it's available in all good bookshops.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Bye-bye.